Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that this month marks 5 years since Premier Insight was launched, bringing you this and many other podcasts designed to deepen your faith. Since 2020, God has used this ministry to reach millions with over 20 million downloads of Premier Insight content, including one longtime atheist who shared, "I find this show and its guests deeply engaging as I continue on my personal faith journey." This ministry is completely reliant on the support of friends like you. That's why on this anniversary month, we're asking you to take just a moment and provide whatever gift is possible to keep this ministry going strong. If you believe this kind of ministry is needed and that more people need to be reached with this content, then I'm asking you to respond with a gift today. Just visit premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis today. Thank you for your generosity. Now, let's get into today's episode.
Hi, I'm Michael Bird, co-host of the Ask NT Write Anything podcast, and I want to ask you, what exactly is the gospel? You'd think Christians would generally agree on this, but actually, there are some rich and important differences in how the gospel can be understood. That's why I edited with Jason Maston a new book called 5 Views on the Gospel, part of the Counterpoint series from Zondervan Academic. We've gathered together 5 absolutely brilliant scholars: Michael Horton, Scott McKnight, David DeSilva, Julie Marr, and Shively Smith, each offering a different take on what the gospel really is. Justification by faith, declaring Jesus is King, spiritual transformation, liberation from oppression. I mean, each view is, in a sense, rooted in scripture and history and contemporary mission, but they don't always agree. This book explores, what are we saved from? What are we saved for? And what does it mean to live a life worthy of the gospel? Whether you're a preacher, a student, or just curious, 5 Views on the Gospel will challenge and deepen your understanding of the good news of Jesus Christ. Available now wherever good theology books are sold.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by Dr. Paul Anderson, a professor of biblical and Quaker studies at George Fox University in Oregon. He's the author of over 400 essays and the editor and author of over 30 books. And his new book that he's working on currently, Jesus in Johanan Perspective, Inviting a Fourth Quest for Jesus, will hopefully be out in 2026. So we're going to hear a little bit more about that. But Paul is also a founding member of the John Jesus and History Project. As well as finding out more about Paul's fascinating work, we're going to be hearing a paper that he presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. And the title of Paul's paper there was On Fernseed, Elephants, Boltman and Lewis, Varied Expertise in Critical Perspective. Paul, we're about to hear your paper from the Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference. Are there any of Lewis's works that you think it might be helpful for us to have read before we listen to your talk? Is it helpful, for instance, to have read On Fernseed and Elephants?
I don't think you need to read it beforehand, but go back and read it afterwards. Tell me what you think about that. I would say go ahead and read Rudolf Boltmann also and read some of his writings, because Boltmann is also a great theologian. And that's one of the reasons why biblical scholars have loved what he has done, because he's also asked, you know, how does this speak to us personally and existentially, whether or not it's grounded in eyewitness memory? And he does acknowledge the theological tensions in the text. So I say read Boltmann, even if we might disagree with the origin of the material.
Brilliant. What you are about to hear is Paul's paper from the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Paul's paper was On Fernseed, Elephants, Boltman and Lewis, Varied Expertise in Critical Perspective.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm not a Lewis scholar. I'm a Johannine scholar and a Boltman scholar. And I would say I'm a hard-nosed literary, historical, and theological critic. What I find, though, is that I find myself agreeing with many of Lewis's critiques of Boltman, on whom I wrote my doctoral dissertation on John's Christology. So, on Fernseed, Elephants, Lewis, and Boltman, we have two scholars here, and Lewis describes himself as a disciplinary outsider between himself and Boltman. Thank you, Michael Ward, for allowing me to present at the C.S. Lewis Society there in Oxford. Also presented on this subject on the fourth gospel and the historical quest for Jesus, calling for a fourth quest at several universities in the UK. The Gospel of John is like a stream in which a child can wade and an elephant can swim. It's a primer for coming to faith in Christ, but also I would say there's more disagreement on the Gospel of John among top scholars around the world than any other part of the Bible. So it's into that fray that I have jumped in myself, and I've published over 100 essays and books on John. So in this essay, originally titled Modern Theology and Biblical Criticism, it was first read at Westcott House, or is that Wainscot House in Cambridge? A couple of good essays by Van Hooser and Bauckham and others. Others have approached things. Thank you, Michael, for your good work. Tom Wright sent me an essay that he, or actually a reference to his book that he had done, The Gifford Lectures. My own mentor, Elton Trueblood, devoted A Place to Stand as a sequel to Mere Christianity, a quarter century hence. And I'll be referencing Roger Newell's good book a little bit later. So what Lewis asks is whether the disparagement of John's historicity is really worthy. He is not acting as a shepherd. He is acting as a sheep and asking, why do shepherds not teach their students something that's more fruitful for the sheep? So here are four bleats. First of all, critical scholars claim to read between the lines, but they miss the content of the lines. Second, historical teachings of Christ were early misunderstood and misinterpreted by his followers. At least that's what critical scholars have sometimes argued. Third, critical scholars are committed to the principle that the miraculous does not occur, and often dogmatically so. And then form critics argue they can detect folkloric origins of materials, so we know they did not come from eyewitnesses. So on bleak one, to deny the Gospels of the miraculous replaces essential truths with picture truths. That leads a person to either be a simpleton or to become an atheist. Another point, critical scholars lack literary judgment, failing to distinguish between historical and mythic narratives. Boltman calls the teaching on the parousia, for instance, unassimilated, whereas he talks about the way of the cross as perfectly real. Boltman claims the Jesus of the Gospels has no personality, but rather, in Lewis's judgment, Jesus in the Gospels shows shrewdness. He shows intolerable severity in casting out the merchandise of the temple. He also has irresistible tenderness. So as Lewis reads the gospel text, he says, no, there's a lot of personality there and coming out differently in the different gospels. Paradoxically, and here I think Boltman would agree, in the incarnation, the divine glory is both revealed and encountered. So that might be a nexus and a connection between these two scholars. So claiming the impersonality of Jesus in the Gospels does not match the facts of this presentation. On bleat two, claiming that Jesus was early on misunderstood, well, that's terribly arrogant for scholars to claim we got it right, they got it wrong back then. The same critique also applies to interpretations of Plato and Aristotle and Shakespeare. As you know, as academicians, we make our livings by disagreeing with what has been. Well, how do we know that our disagreements are going to withstand the test of time? And so he says, come on now, that's really arrogant. The idea that any man or writer should be opaque to those who lived in the same culture, spoke the same language, shared the same habitual imagery and unconscious assumptions, and yet transparent to those who have none of these advantages, in my opinion, is preposterous. Bleat three, because anything miraculous is held to be impossible, none of the Lord's predictions of the future can have happened in reality, as inspired predictions can never occur. Again, notice the dogmatism of historical critical methodology. Likewise, none of the miracles of Jesus or the apostles can ever be imagined to have occurred. If miraculous, then unhistorical, was not learned from the text, it was imposed to the text from the outside. The greater influence is therefore the spirit of the age, not historical memory. Bleat four, the loudest and the longest. Scholars claim to know the sitzim leben, the setting in life of the text, and therefore you have these folkloric origins emerging, and therefore that's where they come from, not historical memory. He says, come on now, how do we really know that? Furthermore, when scholars interpret Lewis's motives or understandings, he says they are totally wrong. Was the origin of the ring the atomic bomb? He says, absolutely not. This came up before the atomic bomb was invented. How about the origins of Green's tiger and Lewis's lion? He said, no, totally independent. And so scholars are wrong in inferring Lewis's inferences or judgments about things, saying that they emerge from culture. And if they're wrong about Lewis, how can they possibly be right about somebody in the ancient world? So assured results of modern scholarship are sheer illusions. The men who know the facts are dead and they can't blow the gaff. Okay, and so that's just a critique of the whole enterprise. So if recent literary critics are totally wrong about contemporary works, then ancient literary critics can fare no better in their reconstructions. So these are learned people, but also different expertise areas. Moving on, in acknowledging different forms of expertise, here we have two different views of scholarship. In Bultmann's view, we can know very little about Jesus of history because the fathers crafted their memories around him, around their missional interest and theological investments. So the gospel need to be demythologized and then remythologized into the modern sensibility. And Lewis's view, while there are certainly mythical and dramatized presentations of biblical heroes, the gospels do not reflect that sort of genre. And so as a scholar of narrative and also of myth, he says these really aren't myths in quite the same way that Job or Jonah or other texts would be. So what do we do with the fact that the Gospel of John is highly theological and different? Here are just some examples of how John is different from the synoptics. These are real problems, but the question is, how do we deal with these issues? So as in questioning Bultmann, what Lewis is saying is that shepherds should be writing for the sheep, not writing for other shepherds. Otherwise, how is this going to be really feeding the sheep? When you look at Bultmann's work, of course, Lewis is only aware of theology of the New Testament at this point. Bultmann's commentary on the Gospel of John, which I got back out into paperback form a few years ago, it had not been produced yet. Well, here's a part of the history of German scholarship that Lewis doesn't reference, and perhaps he's not even aware of it. With Albert Schweitzer, we have kind of the no quest, or saying that we really can't know anything. Look at how much these scholars disagree. This leads then to the new quest, and then the third quest, and now I'm advancing the fourth quest, which is inclusive. The first three quests functioned by leaving John out. It's a whole lot easier to say Matthew, Mark, and Luke, that's historical. John is theological and different. Let's leave it out. The problem, though, is that the Gospel of John has more archaeologically attested details and content than all the other Gospels put together. It's not my fault. I'm coming out with a book that I've edited next year with Erdmans, where I literally recruited the top archaeologists around the world to do something on archaeology, John, and Jesus. And it's amazing. That might be a game changer worldwide. We'll see. So you have Reimarus saying, if it seems like a miracle, it's not history. Therefore, the Gospels are not historical. Rather, they're theological projections of people who had an agenda. You can understand that critique. But when you look at Schleiermacher, Schleiermacher is saying the Gospel of John is the one gospel that it has grounded knowledge of Jesus, as opposed to the synoptics. And we have motivations, understandings, those kinds of things that suggest that John is the one historically grounded gospel. David Strauss argued that he spent all of his life overturning Schleiermacher. Even his book, The Christ of Faith and Jesus of History, said, look, this is the one thing I've been doing to overturn Schleiermacher.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Did you know that this podcast and so many others from Premier Insight is completely reliant on the supporters of listeners like you? It is true, and the impact is profound. One longtime atheist shared, I find this show and its guests deeply encouraging as I continue on my personal faith journey. Another listener said, during the worst bombardment of voices, this podcast lifted me up and gave me hope. This is what your support makes possible, and why on this fifth anniversary of Premier Insight, your support is so urgently needed. If you believe that this kind of ministry is needed and that more people need to be reached with this content, then I'm asking you to respond with a gift today. Just visit premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis today. Your gift is needed to help equip believers, reach skeptics, and keep biblical truth in the conversation. Thank you for your support.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Well, in the New Quest, which then comes along with Ernst Käsemann in 1654, you have, okay, let's start it up. We can't ignore that Jesus was a Jew. We have to take that seriously historically. And so Käsemann develops four criteria for determining historicity, which function to exclude John from the mix. Now, in Käsemann's view, it's just, you know, these are sure stepping stones. It's a minimalist approach, parsimonious, the bare minimum. And so we must exclude the Gospel of John. Well, Tom Wright argued that, you know, we've got some sociological studies from the 70s and 80s on, and maybe this is like a third quest using methodologies that help us out. John Rich is my doctoral advisor at Glasgow. Jesus is transforming Judaism. Ed Sanders, Jesus was a Jew. Well, the Jesus seminar then, from the 80s forward, said, okay, we're going to have scholars vote on things. And so four beads and scholars will vote. They came up with only 18% of the sayings going back to Jesus. And yet there are more sayings in the Gospel of Thomas than even in the Gospel of Mark. And if anything looked or smelled or felt like John, kick it out, even if it's in the Q tradition, like none knows the Father but the Son, the bolt out of the Johannine blue. It gets rejected from the Q source, supposedly, because it sounds like John. Well, this led to questions then about the fourth quest. We have literally the dehistoricization of John and the de-Johannification of Jesus. Sometimes you gotta make words up. But that is the two critical platforms. When we look at these, though, each of them is really flawed. They don't stack up to critical scrutiny. So that's what led the John Jesus in History Project, which began in 2002, and I've been a champion of the project, to say, well, let's just draw papers in and invite people to argue anything they want, but show us why it's true or why something isn't true. We also published a variety of other books, as well as our central series. I'm editing volume 4, 5, 6, and 7 right now. Volume 4 is going to come out this year. Here are my three books on John: Christology of the Fourth Gospel, Fourth Gospel and the Quest for Jesus, Riddles of the Fourth Gospel, and Introduction. So, John the Problem. Why is John the least like the other Gospels and also the most theological? Well, when you look at the sources of John's theological and historical tensions, Rudolf Bultmann argued, and this is what Lewis is criticizing, Bultmann argued that since we know John cannot be written by an eyewitness, notice even that judgment at the beginning, and I can't go into the details, but the basis for that is also totally wrong. But that's another paper. But if we know it can't be written by an eyewitness, well, it's got historical stuff. It's not dependent on the synoptics. So how about a miracle source, a Semeia source? How about revelation sayings that must be Gnostic? How about a passion narrative? How about the evangelist? And then it falls apart. The redactor puts it together in the wrong order. When Bultmann rearranges it then, lo and behold, you get Gnostic poetry. Well, I studied all of Bultmann's evidence using John 6 as a case study. The distribution was random. There's no evidence for alien sources underlying the Gospel of John. That is a critical fact. And also, Bultmann is correct that John is not dependent on the synoptics. Every time John is similar to Mark, it's also different. So, in my judgment, critically, I think John represents an independent Jesus tradition that also is developed theologically. I don't think the prologue is the first stroke of the quill. I think it's a response of the community added to the final edition. But we have an independent Jesus memory in the fourth gospel. So problems with Bultmann's view. Barrett argued John is dependent on the synoptics, but every similarity is also different. Ray Brown argued that we have John's material coming up together as an independent tradition, maybe a couple of editions. I like Brown's approach. So, just looking at how we approach these things, Richard Burridge, by the way, pointed out that we do that the Gospels, the four Gospels, including John, are not myths, but they are bioi. They are biographical narratives, and they fit into that genre the best. So here's the way that I think we should look at things. I think we have two editions of John. Maybe the first edition is an augmentation of Mark. The five miracles in the first edition are the five miracles that are not in the Gospel of Mark. And so number one and number two before Mark 1, three miracles in Jerusalem and Bethany, augmenting Mark geographically as well as chronologically. Then after the death of the beloved disciple, John the Elder finalizes the gospel and passes it on. His testimony is true. Here's a bioptic hypothesis. Mark and John are the bioptic gospels, two different perspectives from day one. What if Mark contains the preaching of Peter? What if John contains the preaching of John? What if they traveled in ministry together and agreed but also disagreed with each other? See, this is a modified traditional view that I think is the strongest view critically. So in looking at Bultmann then and Lewis, the Gospels are historical accounts of Jesus and his ministry. With Bultmann, John does not depend on the synoptics. It reflects at least two editions. In the fourth quest for Jesus, all resources are welcome to be used, including the Gospel of John. So to build on the good work of Roger Newell, we need to look at the original context of these Gospels to understand what they mean, and then we need to embrace the emotional and cognitive content. And then this leads us to a fresh response of discipleship in our contemporary settings. So as we read the Gospels, including the Gospel of John, the invitation is to follow Jesus. And we're not talking about Twitter or Facebook. They invite us into discipleship. And on that, actually, Bultmann and Lewis would agree. And by the way, somebody should write a book on that. Oh, I guess somebody did. And we should follow Jesus together in all walks of life and parts of the church. So how do we wade with children and swim with elephants? With Augustine, take up and read, jump in, read thoughtfully and meaningfully. Appreciate the detailed fern seeds and problems, but also don't overlook the elephant in the room. After all, as we read the Gospels, we see an invitation to transforming encounter with the subject of the story, Jesus. Thank you.
That was Paul Anderson's paper on Fernseed Elephants, Bultmann and Lewis, Varied Expertise in Critical Perspective, which was given at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference held at George Fox University. Paul, now that we've listened to your paper, are there any final helpful clarifications that you want to share or anything else you want to add about Lewis, about his approach to the Bible, about the Gospel of John?
Well, thank you, Ruth. It's great being in touch with you. No, it was just a lot of fun, and I enjoyed presenting this paper first at the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society, and also presented for Peter Head there at the Wycliffe Biblical Studies Seminar the next morning. And some of the people who had heard the Lewis paper, they came to that seminar, which was really fun. There I was lecturing on the fourth quest for Jesus, which includes the Gospel of John, as well as Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and everything else. It was then fun to present at the amazing international conference on C.S. Lewis at George Fox University. And one of the fun things that came out of that was just getting connected with some amazing scholars from around the world. So I look forward to being in touch with C.S. Lewis scholars in the future. Again, my mentor, Elton Trueblood, wrote a sequel to Mere Christianity 25 years hence. It's Elton Trueblood's most important of his 37 books, A Place to Stand. Give me a place to stand, says Archimedes, I can move the entire world. And that place to stand is Jesus Christ.
Paul, where can we go to find out more about your work, about this new book that you're working on, about some of your other academic interests?
Thank you, Ruth. Well, you can look at my Amazon page. Some of my books and articles are there. My academia page, my George Fox University page. Especially look at the John, Jesus, and History Project. I've just completed editing volume 4 in the central series. There will be 3 more volumes, we hope, coming out over the next 3 years. That will be a total of 13 volumes that we will have published between 2007 and 2027. And so it really is the largest historical Jesus project in the new millennium, but this time including John instead of leaving it out like the first 3 quests have done.
Paul, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes as well so that people can click on that.
Lovely, Ruth. And thank you.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.